Olá, pessoal! Para você que está acessando esse episódio, nós temos uma novidade para o seu 2023. Nós estamos muito felizes em fazer o lançamento do MeTime Engage, o primeiro evento presencial da MeTime. Ele vai ser um evento de um dia focado em insights sobre sales engagement e vendas, distribuído em palestras e painéis com mais de 10 especialistas na área. O nosso objetivo com o MeTime Engage é entregar conteúdo de altíssima qualidade para SDRs, vendedores e lideranças comerciais. O MeTime Engage vai acontecer em São Paulo no dia 4 de julho, no Teatro Santander. Para você saber mais, acessa metime.com.br/engage. Um até logo, eu te espero em São Paulo. Tenha um ótimo episódio. Um abraço. Hey guys, this is Cast for Closers, your podcast for dominating inside sales and hitting your quota. For those of you who are listening to us for the first time, my name is Diego and I'm your host here. And for those of you who have been listening to us for a very long time, this one is also especially for you. The topic for this episode is creating a category and selling something new. But this is not a regular podcast. We're celebrating 200 episodes, almost 7 years on the mic, and 200 episodes. We had Mark Roberge 100 episodes ago, and now for the number 200, I'm super excited to bring another special guest. If you have read MeTime's blog, you for sure have saw his content. I'm talking about Chris Orlob, former director of sales at Gong and now CEO and co-founder at Quota Signal. Chris was the second US-based employee for Gong, and he is the one of the few behind all the growth Gong has had over the years. Chris, as I was telling you behind the curtains, this is a very, very special milestone for us. Gong's part of our history at MeTime. We've read all of your content. So as a sales engagement platform, we've been following and advocating Gong's insights, and it's an honor to have you here. Thanks a lot for your time. Please feel free to introduce yourself, introduce what you're doing right now, what is Quota Signal, and give a hug on our audience.
Well, I think you did an excellent job of introducing me. So thanks, Diego, for having me. I don't know if much else needs to be said, right? I had a blast at Gong. I worked for Gong for 6 years from just under $200,000 in annual revenue when I started. And when I left, we were doing a little over $200 million in revenue. So had an absolute blast and really excited about our conversation today.
Yeah, Chris. So we have this modus operandi where we just jump into the episode. And I want to start with the basics, with something we heard a lot in the first years of MeTime. When we're selling something new, the prospect automatically compares us to the closest thing she knows and comes up with something like, oh, so you're like CRM, but with X. So from a sales and marketing perspective, Chris, how do we differentiate yourself from what's known and create your own space like you guys did at Gong?
Well, I think it's different for sales and marketing.
Yes.
Right? Because marketing, your job is to create the category over a very long period of time, right? You need a lot of money typically to do that. You probably are inventing a new word.
Yes.
Like we did, revenue intelligence. And it is a long-term market education play. And you're right in assuming that through that lens, being compared to something existing is probably not great because you want to create a new category and stand in your own right. From a sales perspective, though, it's not such a bad thing to be compared to something that the customer understands. In fact, I would almost lean into it because it's probably going to help you close the deal, right? So like the example at Gong is over the long term in the marketing team, we're talking about revenue intelligence, we're talking about category creation, we're educating the market. But the sales team, you know, the customer would be like, oh, so this is like call recording on steroids. And sometimes we would just agree with that because it helps them understand it more.
Yes.
And of course, we would explain the value a little bit more. So there's a little bit of a yin and yang dance. You got to do the long-term thing of educating the market. Eventually, you do have to transition the sales team to getting on board and you know, using your new category creation term. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to have a reference point when you're in a sales conversation, particularly if it helps the customer understand what it is you do a little bit easier, as long as it doesn't undersell you, right? Like, so
yes.
One example that is, as I was leaving Gong, we were launching a new product called Gong Assist. That product hasn't been launched yet, so I won't go into detail about explaining it. But some of our early customers compared it to a to-do list, which totally undersold its value. And so you do have to be careful with what you are going to be compared to. Like, does it underappreciate your product? Then that's probably a conversation you want to steer away from.
Chris, as you were saying, and reflecting about MeTime's story, it took years, but we embraced it. At first, we ignored. We tried to educate the market around sales engagement concept here in Brazil. Then it came to a point where there was an elephant in the room we had to address. We had to talk about CRM differences and not undersell. Because if you look at the CRM space, the price per user is very low, is so much lower than the sales engagement platform. So we had to address that, but in a way that we had to create a value proposition and show that so we could charge for it. So we took marketing and sales efforts to create a narrative that showed how different we were from a CRM perspective. And for us, it was a necessary step. It was attrition first. We resisted, then we accepted, we embraced, and we fought it. So you create materials, articles, infographics. It's like rock over the mountain. It's a huge effort, and you have to repeat it like hell. In Portuguese, this episode always starts with a slogan that says sales engagement, and it's like a ritual. You have to perpetuate this for years to make it effectively, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to market like you mean it, right?
Yes.
I see too many companies who dabble with their marketing. I think a lot of software companies and SaaS companies way underinvest in marketing.
Yes.
Right? Like, having been on both sides, the sales side and the marketing side, marketing is, it should be a tsunami. Like you said, there should be content marketing, there should be infographics, there should be educating analysts, there should be paid marketing. It is, you know, I hate to use like a violent term, I just can't think of a better one, but it's warfare, right?
Yes,
you need
yes.
infantry, you need the boats, you need the tanks, you need everything.
Air support, yes, everything.
Yeah.
Chris, with Gong's category in place and in mind, revenue intelligence, as you said, now you need to tell your prospect why she needs to listen. So now, from a storytelling perspective, how did you guys create the narrative, the story behind the space to sell something that was, at that time, completely new?
Yeah, I have the magic bullet to selling and marketing. Are you ready for it?
Yes.
It is, understand your customer so deeply that you can peer into their soul. Now,
yeah.
I said that tongue in cheek because it's not a magic bullet. It's actually really, really hard to get to that point. It's a lot of hard work to get to the point where you understand your customer that deeply. But really, that's the only magic bullet, right? You can't come up with a story or a narrative or a message or a sales tactic that's going to work from a place where you don't understand your customer.
Yes.
And when you do understand your customer, all of those things start to become more obvious. Right. So I have personally been in the sales technology space my entire career. I started at a company called InsideSales.com.
Yes.
Then I co-founded a business called Conversature that led me to joining Gong. And now I'm doing Quota Signal. And so I can look at a CRO and ask one question and know exactly what they're going to say, because I understand the buyer persona that I sell and market to so well, because I've been doing it for 10 or 12 years. And so that's the starting point, is like, go interview your customers. Forget, you know, selling for a second. Go interview them, document what you learned. And now the narratives are going to start to come out of that, right? So that's your starting
yes.
point, is don't start with the message. Don't start with the narrative. It's very important to get that right, but start with the customer.
Yeah. So it sounds simple and plain, but we did something just as you said. We took SDRs, our end users, and asked them, how did your work change with us? And we took sales leaders and ask them, how did your business change with us? And Chris, with those sentences, those exact words, we updated website, value proposition, brand promises. And again, you have to repeat it. Repeat it using their words, because it will resonate. As a proof of this, we started just the opposite of what you said, and we missed a brand promise. We were telling X, and our prospects, our clients, were saying Y. And then we changed for what they were saying, and we saw the increase in the numbers. So as simple as that, but you have to listen to your prospects, your clients, and repeat their words. I mean, this is a very, very important mind change, because we are also addicted to let's have the CEO words and start by that, right? So it's a game changing.
Yeah. Here's a couple more tips to accelerate this process. Number one, refine your ideal customer profile, right? Like if you can get pretty narrow with your best customers, and now you go interview all these customers, and now patterns start to emerge. If you're too broad with your ideal customer profile, and you start just, you know, interviewing a bunch of customers and not all of them are the same, then you're just going to get a bunch of noise rather than signal, right? You're not going to find a consistent pattern. But if you get really crisp on who your ideal customer is, and then you go interview 30 of them, your marketing story is going to come out. Like, you don't even have to come up with anything. They'll tell you what the story is. Yes. And so those are like your two tips to getting that right. Get super crisp with your ideal customer profile. Go talk to 20 or 30 of them. Try to make them the same customer profile so that, you know, pattern recognition can work for you. And then they'll start to tell you the story that you can use in your marketing. The only other tip I have in that area is just, you know, define the problem scope that you solve and ask questions in that area.
Yes.
Right. So like the problem scope that my company Quota Signal solves is sales hiring. Our ideal customer profile is a Series C company that's hiring a lot of salespeople. And so I'll go interview 20 chief revenue officers that work at Series C companies that are hiring at least two or three salespeople a month.
Yes.
And I'll say, tell me about what your biggest challenge is when it comes to sales hiring. You do that 20 or 30 times and your marketing story will become obvious.
Fantastic. Great, great addition, Chris. So being a Gong's fan and reading absolutely everything on its blog, I know you guys do have incredible sales enablement resources in marketing. So I want to dig more on this. What were the most important prospect questions you think your marketing had to address in order to enable more sales?
I think, how do you justify the business case was a big one early on.
Yes.
When we were selling Gong in the early days, we didn't understand how to financially justify Gong. It's actually kind of obvious today, at least if you're familiar with the space.
Yes.
But, you know, we would talk to buyers and they're like, how do I make a business case? And we didn't know. Like, we played around with a lot of ideas. We're like, well, you know, we can save manager time and they get paid this much per year and that's worth, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. That didn't work. And we tried a lot of different things, and eventually it started to become clear. It depended, you know, why they were buying Gong, but if you're trying to ramp sellers faster, for example, and you buy Gong, well, if you get a sales rep up to speed 2 months faster, then that's 2 months worth of revenue that you captured. And so there's a business case.
Yes.
And there's a business case to be made for increasing your close rates. So that was the big one. Like, it's almost, it took us like maybe two and a half years to even understand how to justify Gong financially.
Yes.
But once we did, that's such a high ROI thing you can do, is if you can figure out financial justification for your product, the returns are pretty big. Now, I want to be clear, people don't buy products just for financial return. They tend to use that as, you know, justifying why they want to buy it. They buy for emotional reasons, not rational.
Yes.
But you still have to have that in place, especially today, because CFOs are going to demand some sort of financial justification.
Yeah. And that's a really, really bitch period. It took years for us to get to the money zone and then say, oh, okay, so with me time, you generate 30% more sales meetings times your close rate times your average ticket.
Deal size,
so that's hundreds of thousands of Brazilian reais. It took years, Chris. We tried everything to get to that money zone or to that business justification, just as you said. And I was laughing here because for us, it took also a lot of years. And Chris, doing my research, I stumbled upon a recent LinkedIn article that you just touched. You said that building a business case is more powerful when you measure the cost of the status quo than when you measure the ROI of your product. So how do we sell actually the cost of doing nothing if your product, your alternative for doing something, is so new? And in the beginning, the data is scarce.
Well, here's the beauty is like selling the cost of the status quo. It doesn't matter if you're selling something new.
Yes.
Because the status quo has nothing to do with your product. So
makes sense.
Your job is to measure the financial impact of the customer's problem, right? So let's say I'm selling Quota Signal, which helps sales leaders hire better sales reps faster. I'll ask a CRO, tell me about your biggest hiring challenges. And I actually just did this today. He said, well, I had a hiring class in May of 10 AEs. And in my annual model, I forecasted that three of them would be mishires. And it turned out that seven of them were mishires.
Wow.
And so we ended up talking about, like, you know, how much that cost. And he modeled that three of them were going to leave and seven of them left or were fired. And so that's a four rep gap in his annual model. And so I asked, what, you know, I know this is going to sound salesy, but what did that cost you in terms of lost revenue? And he said, well, we had to spend time to backfill those four reps. And then we had to ramp the new reps up to speed. And so we had these territories that weren't producing money for about 4 or 5 months because of our ramp time across four reps. And so back in napkin math, we came up with about $900,000 in lost ARR. Now, keep in mind, he didn't even know what my product is yet. So it doesn't matter if you're selling something new. It matters if you can quantify the business problem that your new product solves. In my case, it was really easy. That's the first advice I would give you is, like, if the question is, how do I justify financially this new product that nobody knows about? I would say you're asking the wrong question. I would say, how do you justify the problem that your product solves? And that's how you do it.
With this backward math you said.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes. So I just said that in the last questions, it took us years to quantify that we made every two SDRs perform like three. And I would say to our audience, don't stop looking for this math, because it justifies and it puts, as you said, Chris, a rational element in the sales, because we are looking for rational arguments to justify our emotions and buy something. So I would say this to our audience, to never, never stop looking for these kind of numbers to justify, if not the future, justifying not staying where you are. So the cost of doing nothing or the cost of the status quo, just as you said.
And an easy way, like if you don't know exactly how to quantify the problem you solve, an easy way to figure it out is, as you're talking about the problem with your customer, ask them, if you solved this problem, what metric would improve?
Yes.
And they'll tell you the metric, and now you've got something measurable that you can start to quantify.
Yeah, that was your last tip on Discovery Call, on that same LinkedIn article. What metric would improve most? Also a great addition here, Chris. Chris, I want to touch on two other things before we wrap this up. One of the hardest things to do, especially in the new category, is to create urgency in the sales process. In the early days, the problems you solve are new, the implications are even newer. So business cases, case studies, debatable or fragile. We talked about this in the last question in the form of the cost of doing nothing, but what are the other ways you guys found at Gong to create urgency, selling the future, selling something new?
Yeah, I still think it goes back to the problem. And the way that I teach people to create urgency is through building negative impact, right? So there's a couple phases of the discovery that I teach. First, it's find a business problem, which you and I have been talking about so far, right? Find a quantifiable business problem. But then the second is understand and build the negative impact of that business problem. And that's where urgency lives. That's how you create urgency from thin air. And so what that typically sounds like is, let's say you're like 15 minutes into a discovery call. You understood the problem. The formula is step one, summarize the problem. Step two, ask a negative impact question. So that might sound like let's pretend I'm selling Gong and the customer has like a ramp time challenge. I'll say, so Diego, if I understood you, you know, so far, you have 80 reps in the next year that you're going to hire, and you need to ramp them faster than how you've been fasting or ramping existing reps. You've been ramping existing reps at about 9 months, and next year's annual model says that you need to ramp them at 7 months. So you've got this 2 month gap. And if you don't make it up, it's going to be worth, I mean, it's going to cost millions of dollars in ARR. Did I understand you right so far? The customer is going to say yes. You say, great. So with that established, can you help me understand the ripple effects this challenge will have on the business if you don't solve it? So their answer to that question is going to start to give you the raw material to build urgency. Notice I didn't say, how will that impact the business? Even though it's the same question, when you ask, how will that impact the business? Buyers have been asked that question so many times that it almost feels cheesy and manipulative. And so what I found is if you just sub the language and you say, help me understand the ripple effects that has on the, this problem has on the business. Help me understand how this affects you personally, and maybe even precurse that with, you know, I know this is going to sound really salesy, but help me understand how this affects you personally. That's where you find urgency, right? Because again, if I was selling quota signal back to that same, you know, CRO who had that 10 AE hiring class that attrited seven of them, and I say, help me understand the ripple effects that has on the business, he's going to say, I can't hit my revenue number, right? Like if I'm losing reps and I have to backfill them and I've got to ramp those new reps, then I've got a huge revenue gap. And then I'll continue following up. How big of a revenue gap? Well, let's do some back napkin math. And missing a revenue target for a CRO, that's painful. That's their entire job. And so now I've built urgency. And again, he has nothing. He doesn't even know what the product is yet. And so that's the key, in my opinion, to building urgency. There are other methods to do it, right? There are so many sales techniques on the planet. But one of the most predictable ways to build urgency is asking negative impact questions. It's so much more powerful to build pain than it is to sell on positive benefits.
Yes, because people are more inclined to not lose money than to earn more, right? It's just psychology.
They're twice as likely to act on something that helps them avoid loss than act on something that helps them gain something. This is called loss aversion.
Yes.
It's been studied extensively in the behavioral economics field. I mean, that's the gist of it. People hate losing things far more than they love gaining things.
Yeah. And of course, we can use that as an urgency tool. Nicely covered, Chris. So in order for us to wrap this episode up, Chris, I want to approach the money aspect in the sales process. We kind of did this, but especially in new markets, new categories, our prospects usually don't have that. The budget allocated. So as Trish Bertuzzi said in her book, I don't have a budget allocated for a moon trip because I didn't know that was possible. So how do we approach a budget conversation with our prospect if the budget isn't always there?
I would say is if you can build enough pain and if you can build enough negative impact, and then finally, if you can build a business case, a powerful person will go find budget. Honestly, I don't think I've ever sold in a situation where somebody was like, yeah, I have budget for this already. That's just my career. I'm always like selling new stuff that doesn't really exist. So I don't know any, I have no idea what it's like to start a sales cycle with a buyer saying, yep, I've got, you know, $600,000 set aside for this. So now that's not to say it's easy, right? You're going to have to coach your buyer. So let me give you stream of consciousness. Here's a few keys to making this happen. Number one, find pain. Number two, build negative impact. Number three, build a business case. But number four, which we haven't talked about, is find a bulldog champion. And when I say a bulldog champion, That is a champion for your product who is willing to run through walls to get the deal done, right? They're typically right. the type of person who is kind of loud internally. They're assertive. You've got to find that person, because creating budget internally is a series of internal sales conversations that they are going to have on your behalf. And if you've got somebody with a weak personality, they're probably not going to get it done. Now, if you have those four elements, though, then that budget gets created. All you have to do as a seller is coach your champion, right? They say, well, I'm going to go talk to the CFO. He needs a business case, or she needs a business case. And now you coach them through the business case. So good selling creates budget. That's the short version.
And Chris, it makes sense, because a lot of the times you have to like walk your champion through how he or she would explain upwards in the hierarchy of the company, your sales, your product, your value proposition, why she or he would care about it. So analyzing our prospects, our clients, friends in the sales space, it's so much more frequent, the budget creating itself, rather than, oh yeah, I know sales engagement category and I was waiting for you guys to show up because I have this money set aside, as you said. So I loved the four elements. The Bulldog Champion really, really makes a difference. And it's beautiful to see when your business starts to create all those Bulldog Champions that they left. They leave this company, but they search for you in their next company. At least I saw that Mitaim was doing something dignified, like, great. Our champions were looking for us in the next companies they worked. So look for these Bulldog Champions, our audience, and they will move the chains for you.
Great.
Chris, I want to thank you again for your time, your preparation here for this episode. It's a very, very special moment for us. 200 episodes, like I said, almost 7 years on this microphone. And it's a joy to bring not yet friends, but references, thought leaders on this market. It was a pleasure to record this episode with you. It was a masterclass. I usually use these episodes as a mentor, the guest. So thanks a lot for all you shared here with us. I'm positive our sales leaders will learn a lot. This is a marketing episode, so thanks a lot for being here with us. Please feel free to leave your LinkedIn profile to talk about Quota Signal. This is your space, man.
Yeah, Phil, I mean, first of all, it was a blast, so thanks for having me on. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, go for it. You know, just search Chris Orlob. I think I'm probably the only Chris Orlob on the planet, at least as far as I know.
Yes.
And then one thing that might be interesting to the audience listening is we have a SaaS Discovery Masterclass that we launched shortly ago. It is how to create urgency from thin air and sell in an economic meltdown. We've had over 1,000 sellers sign up for it so far. It's the exact discovery system I use to scale Gong from $200,000 in ARR to $200 million and a $7.2 billion valuation.
Wow.
So if that sounds interesting to you, if you want to learn discovery techniques that help you create urgency and sell like crazy, head over to pclub.io, right? Like President's Club. So pclub.io/discovery. And you can learn more about it there. And for those listening, I created a 50% coupon for those in Brazil. You know, you get to the checkout form and you want to move forward with it, just type the word developing into the coupon code. Developing as in like developing country.
Yes.
And you'll get 50% off.
Chris, thanks a lot for this offer. We will leave every link, the coupon, everything on the description for this episode. We will also be in YouTube for subtitles, for the language barriers to be off on this episode. So again, thanks a lot. I wish you very, very well. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Diego.